The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service, another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. And our veteran today is Jack Lewis. Jack, welcome to Salute a Veteran Every Day.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
I don't want to make you blush, but Jack's got a great voice for radio. We met at the Rex Wellness Center, and I reeled him in. So welcome to Salute a Veteran. Let's start out with your background, your service. We won't tell them about you being a judge yet, but you were in the Navy, correct?
Correct.
And tell us how you got down that trail.
Well, I started that trail in being born in Farmville, North Carolina, mm-hmm. Pitt County, between Wilson and Greenville, mm-hmm. and born at home. Wasn't much of a hospital in Greenville as there is now, but I was born at home and brought up as an only child. Uh-huh. I had two good friends in the neighborhood who were also only children, only sons, and so I never felt that I was an only child or mm-hmm. that I lacked anything. Mm-hmm. You may note, I really have no accent because I was reared in Farmville with my grandmother from Georgia and my mother from South Carolina and my father from Pitt County. So I...
You have a mixture.
Oh, yes. And so I went to Farmville High School, mm-hmm. Graduated without honors, but having done something that not many did, and that is I played football and played in the band, mm-hmm. sometimes at the same home game.
Same? Oh, wow. That's
it wasn't a huge school, and so everybody had to do that part. Mm-hmm. So I just changed covers to do what we had to do, play football or play in the band. So then...
I don't believe I've ever heard of that before.
I did make it through and went to Chapel Hill, graduated in 1954, and went to Chapel Hill in 1954, mm-hmm. Which was an entirely different school. Mm-hmm. It's now, I'm told, about 80% female, but then only juniors and seniors could be female, mm-hmm. and nurses.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I went through, graduated in... 1958, and went to law school, mm-hmm. And my father did exactly the same thing, except he went to undergraduate and law school and finished in law school in 1930, and in the same building.
Wow.
I finished in 1961. Uh-huh. And
same building.
Same building, and the class pictures that were taken, of which I saw after he had died, and he was standing in front of the class picture, as we did in front by the columns, and we were standing in front of the same column 30 years later. And incidentally, since I graduated in 61, it was 31 years later, uh-huh. We had five of the same professors.
Oh, interesting.
And so in 1967 was a draft. Mm-hmm. And they came about and they said, if you can finish law school and pass the bar anywhere, we will send you to Officer Candidate School in Newport, Rhode Island, and then we will commission you a Lieutenant JG, junior grade, instead of an ensign.
And what year was this?
1961. And so I undertook to do that. I finished law school, mm-hmm. passed the bar, mm-hmm. and there was no JAG Corps, as they say now, Judge Advocate General. Mm-hmm. So I was commissioned a line officer. I wore a star like Nimitz, and I had to take celestial navigation and gunnery and all the things that it takes to know how to command a ship. Mm-hmm. But I was going to be the last to command a dump of the commissioned officers. So I went and then to justice school. And Newport, Rhode Island is the coldest place I ever served anywhere for anything. I asked them if that wind coming across Narragansett Bay was closer to the North Pole than they realized. But it wasn't, and I survived.
Kept your sense of humor.
And was commissioned on Friday the 13th of April, 1962, which some of my to-be shipmates said, we'll never make it. It's on Friday the 13th. It's a terrible thing. But the 13th's been always, for me, a lucky number.
Good for you.
So I survived and was sent to Georgia. Glencoe, it was called, because it's in Glenn County. And there was a wonderful poet, Lanier, who wrote the Marshes of Glen. And my mother said, oh, you're going to the Marshes of Glen. I said, I hope not the Marshes, Bill. I said, well, airplane's going to be then. So I stayed there a year and 3 months, and the CO was a North Carolinian, and it was his last command, and he was going to retire. And so he and I got on very well indeed, and he said, you don't have enough to do here, and so I'm going to suggest you go be considered for another position. And so the position I got considered for, and they called and said, we've got your orders ready. You said you wanted to serve in Europe, and you extended a year. And I said, yes, I do. And he said, your orders, here your orders, you will be the, and there was no JAG Corps, remember, so you will be on the legal staff, the fifth of five, for the commander of Naval Forces Japan.
Wow.
I said, that doesn't sound like Europe.
No, it does.
He said, no, it's Yokosuka. I said, how do you spell that? And so I went. I told my parents, who that not being so long after Pearl Harbor for them, they thought that that would be a terrible place for me to go. But I went, and I was just perfectly delighted after I got to know them. The Japanese are extremely honest. If I went to buy something in a store, they would have three people come up and be sure I got the money right. Because it was my paying in dollars, and they, or rather in yen, and they're having to make the change. So it all worked out very well indeed, and I learned a great deal. Besides being the fifth of five and the only bachelor, I got to go to Okinawa 10 times and do court work. And there was no air conditioning. We didn't really need it. And so when going down to Iwakuni, say, to do a court, some court work, defense work usually, I was on the train with the court reporter, and we were in whites, uniforms, not formal, but not ice cream suit, as we used to call it.
The white but uniforms.
The white dress, not white dress uniforms. So we went to sleep, and he came up and woke me up the next morning, and he said, Lieutenant. By then I'd made lieutenant. Look. And I said, at what? He said, look at me. And we were running up, being pulled by a coal engine, and the windows were open, and we were covered with soot. And I said, oh, my goodness, we can't rub it off. So we both stood up and just shook and got it. So we did it. Well, after a while, after 2 years, no, less than 2 years, they came, an order came that said, proceed for duty as legal officer of the USS Coral, C-O-R-A-L, C, named for the Battle of the Coral Sea, which was an aircraft carrier with 3,600 men. They were all men in those days.
Right.
And it was an aircraft carrier, so we had an air wing. And, by the way, the people in the air wing flew the planes, of course, and they were known as the brown shoes. The people who were, as they said, the ship drivers were the black shoes. And so...
I think it's still like that.
I think it probably still is, but I haven't been aboard a carrier now in a while. Mm-hmm. So I went to the office of the man who was in charge of sending people from one place to another, who's a commander. And I went to him and I said, "Commander," he said, "what can I do for you?" I said, "I have these orders," and I handed them to him. And I said, I need to get from you, I need to be sent. And he looked at it, and he looked up at me, and to my amazement, he said, "It's classified." Well, I looked at him, and I said, "Commander, I have to be there in 3 weeks. Where do I go?" And he said, "Oh." And he looked in a desk drawer, and he looked at something, he said, "It's south of here." And by then, I had become somewhat peeved, and I said, "Commander, half the world is south of here." And he said, "That's all I can tell you." So I literally had to fly from Tachikawa on Air Force Base to Iwakuni, not there, to Okinawa, to Okinawa. It was not there. Though I had spent a day waiting to see if it was coming, they must have thought I was a spy for somebody undesirable. But I finally went to Okinawa, they said, and then to Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines looking for this ship. Mm-hmm. I stayed there 7 days while they said they believed they would look for it. 7 days later, they called in at 7 o'clock in the morning and said, "Lieutenant, we found your ship." I said, "South of here, I presume." And they said, "How did you know?" Well, I got then. I was flown in what was known as a COD, carrier onboard mm-hmm. delivery. Mm-hmm. It was the pilot and the co-pilot, and I was the only passenger. And there's no other seats for any other passengers. I had to crawl in around the tail and crawl up the fuselage, dragging my bag, which wasn't much, and sit in that airplane.
Oh, my gosh.
And it flew, and it flew, and it flew. And finally, I looked out, and I saw sailboats with black sails. And I said, "Where do they fly sail with black sails?" And the fellow said, "Vietnam." I said, "South of here, isn't it?" "Well, yeah." So we landed at Nha Trang, and first available, well, it wasn't really an available place, but it was the first place that relief could be sought since the airplane was not equipped with heads, as we say in the mm-hmm. Navy. And so we were then flown out to the ship. And I can tell you, flying out and over that ship and looking down, it looked to be about the size of a postage stamp. But it was an easy landing, to my amazement, because mm-hmm. there are cords, wires, cables.
Mm-hmm.
And the tail hook. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was facing aft, that is, backward, and so my head was not snapped when it was a very gentle, easy landing mm-hmm. because the cables simply unwind and let you out gently. And there are many cables to be caught, so there's infrequently anything wrong there. They are wrapped around great barrel-like things on either side of the landing area. There's another matter about an aircraft carrier that I'll tell you. The first carriers were simply flat spaces that were put on cruiser chassis or otherwise, mm-hmm. but then later, and with wooden decks, landing decks, which we've learned turned out to be highly flammable.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned that the British invented the steel deck and also something called the canted deck. And that is one that branches off about halfway and goes to the port side so that you can actually launch planes from the canted deck and recover planes from the flat deck.
At the same time.
At the same time. Virtually the same time, not the same minute, mm-hmm. but this, about the same time. So I was fascinated. And you could, the British built aircraft carriers, well, they did, and certainly I've noticed pictures of the Chinese have decks that are inverted, or you have a, you go up a deck in being launched. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really need as much a catapult to propel the planes off. Mm-hmm. So I learned a good deal on that. And I learned also, to my great delight, when I wrote essentially an opinion when a court would be held on the ship, and I was not a judge, had no part in it except to write for the captain, Captain George Cassell, a marvelous man who made admiral. Mm-hmm. I would write a report saying that it was what I thought of.
What the situation was.
I wrote it, and 2 days later, after I submitted it, not long after I'd been on the ship, I got a marine orderly from the captain appeared, and he said, Lieutenant Captain would request your presence. And I said, now, I presume. He said, sir. So I dashed up as fast as I could. Captain was in the in-port proceeding cabin, because we were not doing anything that required any great attention. So the Marine knocked on the door and said, Captain, Lieutenant Lewis is here. And he said, he opened the door, and he said, looked at me right straight in the eye, and he said, where did you get that phrase that you used at the end when you said you thought the trial was conducted properly and let the punishment fit the crime? And I said, Captain, I borrowed that from Gilbert and Sullivan, operetta. He said, you like Gilbert and Sullivan? And I said, yes, sir, I do. Gilbert was a lawyer. And Sullivan, of course, we know. Didn't have to tell him. But Sullivan wrote things like Onward Christian Soldiers.
I did not know that.
And that was Sullivan,
yeah.
Arthur Sullivan. And Gilbert was a lawyer who did better at writing plays than he did practicing law. So we got along just fine.
I bet.
And one of the great examples of his ability and humor and handling people was, I'm 6'2", and he was about 5'6", at the most, mm-hmm. if that tall. And there was a person on the ship whose name I can't remember, but I will use Johnson. And he was forever getting into something. Not serious things, but petty things. And so the captain asked me what I thought we ought to do about this latest event. And I said, Captain, I think it's something that you should have masked. Well, masked in the Navy is non-judicial punishment in other services, mm-hmm. and it means it's just the captain. And by the way, when I was in active service, the captain of a ship at sea in mast, and that's all he could conduct, could imprison a person that he found worthy of it. He could put him in the brig, mm-hmm. for 3 days on bread and water, only in the Navy at sea. Mm-hmm. And we had very good discipline on the ship. But here comes Johnson, and we're out on the flying bridge on either side of the bridge. It was open, and you could go out and see. And it was a pretty day, so we went out there, and it was just the captain, the sergeant-at-arms, his division officer, I was there, and I believe one or two others. So came out and brought him out, and he said, Captain said to Johnson, why are you here again? why can't you stay out of trouble? And Johnson, who is almost precisely the same height as the captain, said, "Captain, people pick on me." And the captain looked him right straight in the eye like he did everybody, and he said, "Why do they pick on you, Johnson?" And Johnson said, "They pick on me because I'm short." And the captain said, "I'm short and nobody picks on me." Well, I burst into laughter, and everybody else said, and the captain even smiled. That was an example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what he did, but there were other things I could tell you that. At any rate, I didn't mention the fact that when I went to law school, I went to was elected to the Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
In 1988, and I had went around and I went to visit, when I decided I was going to run, I went to visit the chief judge of the Court of Appeals, whose name was Fred Hedrick, and an excellent man who had lost his sight when he was growing up by chopping wood, and a splinter hit one eye, and he lost the other as well.
Mm.
Eventually. So he went to Moorhead School.
Mm-hmm.
He learned well. He went to law school, and he learned well. And he was a district court judge, not federal, state.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was elected to the Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to tell him that I was going to run, and he said, I know your work, and I think that you would make a good judge. Well,
that was in North Carolina.
In North Carolina, yeah. And he was, he was never defeated.
Mm-hmm.
He was as good as we've ever had,
wow.
In my opinion,
yeah.
Though I didn't know them all. At any rate, he served, and he knew the briefs would come in, and they were ponderous. They even had to make a rule. One person was so long written, I should say,
mm-hmm.
that they had to make a rule about how long briefs could be. Otherwise, we would never have got through what we were presented to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go and talk, and we sat in groups of three, the Court of Appeals, though they're when I was on, there were 12 people, but we always sat in groups of three except for ceremonial purposes where we didn't make decisions. And it was, if you were on with him, whoever was the senior judge was the judge who was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Others could ask questions if they chose, but if he were in charge, he knew what had been submitted and what the case was all about better than anybody I ever served with.
Mm.
He would have the briefs read to him, but he had a fantastic memory.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a joy to work with. And he also had a wonderful singing voice, sang in his church.
Now, at this point, you were back from the Navy.
Yes, I was back in...
We skipped that a little bit. How was the transition from the Navy to civilian life?
Well, it was certainly somewhat
different.
Different to readjust to the mail and the fact that I could, when I was in Vietnam, I could, and in Japan, I could just mail it at the facilities, and it would come back here without having to put foreign postage.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not an easy thing to acquire a Japanese driver's license. So I got one when I got back, and I was living in Farmville,
mm-hmm.
and unmarried. And my closest friend, who is and I went OCS together, and he's a lawyer, and I just said, Leonard Addington from Minnesota, Austin, Minnesota, by the way, where the Hormel ham is created, and that's where the company is.
Mm-hmm.
But he went to Yale and Minnesota and then Yale. And so we decided, we had both been sent to Japan, and we decided, let's go to Europe. And so we flew from right after we got home, not long after we got home, we flew from the United States. In those days, you could buy a ticket to, and we bought a ticket to Rome, and we could stop anywhere in between and have the date set when you had to get back. We wanted to see the Queen troop the color. Both of us were Anglophiles, and it was really an interesting thing to get back to Europe.
Sure.
Took the train. In those days, you wore coats and ties, and it was, but the Navy was not financing that, and neither were they feeding us. And so we made that trip, and we got back, and just before we, a week before we left, my father was the district governor of Rotary in eastern North Carolina, and he had been invited, me and my mother had been invited to see the swearing-in of a district governor in the next Western. So I said, well, Pap, Daddy, I'm leaving. I'm going to Europe, and there's no time at all. He said, but they want you to meet the daughter of the district governor in the other district. And I said, but tell me about her. And so he said, he asked the man who had called to ask. He said, well, how old is she? And he said, she's about Jack's age. And I said, good gracious. I was nearly 30 by then. I said, where did she go to school? They said, Duke. And I went to Carolina. And I said, well, what does she do? And they said, oh, she teaches school in Greensboro. I said, an old maid Duke school teacher, that is the last thing I need. Well, she turned out to be a blind date, and we never saw anybody else. And when I got back from Europe, we got married. We had two sons, and they're both grown. I've got four grandchildren, and they are still growing.
Well, thank you, Judge. We have run out of time. I think we could go on and do two or three more shows with you. This has been Salute a Veteran Every Day. And I'm going to stand up and salute you.
Oh. Well, since I'm not covered, I can't return this.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. In fact, all of our programs can be found at ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.